Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastamavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So continue on page 15. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, any person who hears with faith and devotion about how Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, killed Putana, and who thus invests his hearing in such childhood pastimes of Krishna, certainly attains attachment for Govinda, the Supreme Original Person. Srila Prabhupada comments, the incident in which the great witch attempted to kill the child but was killed herself is certainly wonderful. Therefore, this verse uses the word adbhutam, meaning specifically wonderful. Krishna had left us many wonderful narrations about him. Simply by reading these narrations as they are described in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one gains salvation from this material world and gradually develops attachment to and devotion for Govinda, Adi Purusha. So the is that one is hearing these with that faith in that. One's not at this point still doubting and everything like that. You know, so especially going through the Bhagavatam and Krishna book, then Prabhupada will explain very nicely. You know, all what in other words, he's already discussing the first nine cantos in the Krishna book. Because he's just giving the tenth canto as the essence of it. And so then and there he'll as he goes through wherever it's important, he will bring up the points to bring one up to speed so that one can appreciate. So the idea is that going through and appreciate, to that degree you appreciate, don't have doubts, don't have, but she's so bad, how could he, you know, save her, you know, or whatever it may be one's particular issues are and very important elements within one's conditioned nature, then the point is if one just leaves that and just appreciates the wonderfulness of the pastimes, then we see is then very easily we become, gradually develops attachment and devotion for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Because the attachment means then you're connected to Krishna, that devotion means that it's fully centered on Krishna. So then that makes it perfect. Conclusion. Yes.
Can we say it is the same thing like we can make offenses by reading?
Means because it's connected to Krishna and you're going like that, it just means that the purification will be slower and the attachment and devotion will be slower. But if we have that faith in everything, simply by reading like that, one will gradually. It's just a matter of his recommendations here. Who hears with faith and devotion, and who thus invests his hearing such child, certainly attains attachment into the Supreme Person. So it's just a matter, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of if it'll be sooner or later. That's all. So, in other words, there has to be some point where we give up our attachment that the material world actually has something to offer and we can actually make a perfect place here. Mm-hmm. Right? Because there's this idea, no, if I arrange like this, then everything will be perfect. And that perfectness, that's going to make devotion flourish. No, devotion flourishes on its own. You know, it's like the lotus flower. It doesn't need that, you know, to be in that dirty water. It's above the water. It's not affected by the water. Or the lotus leaf, you can put how much water you want on it, nothing stays. Mm-hmm. So the point is that the material world will create the wonderful situation for bhakti. That's not real, because bhakti is separate from that. And we see that there are situations that are materially way beyond anything anyone could imagine that it could be that good. And at the same time, as we see situations that really are not ideal. Right? And so, but despite whether it's so wonderfully arranged or not, the devotees are always equal poised in their Krishna consciousness. They're always balanced. So that means Krishna consciousness isn't dependent upon. As we're conditioned, we may find that if it's nicer, then we're happier, because we're happier, we tend to put in more emotion and have that, you know, we have the generosity to apply that, you know, that, what do you call it, that faith and devotion, because we're happy. But when we're grumpy, it's then what about this, what about, you know, like that. So, in that case, then yes, it does have some effect, because then making a nice arrangement then has the benefit that we will actually follow the process properly. But it's not that it actually is a cause for devotion. It's just that in those we'll let devotion happen. Okay. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the idea, is that exposing, as we saw before, exposing oneself, no matter how, as long as it's connected with the idea, the goal is pure love for Krishna, then we can't really do too much. But we even see Putana, even it was envious, but it was fully absorbed in Krishna, she still got purified. But developing love, that will happen when you apply that aspect of faith and devotion. Right? You can get purified even if you're not. But the point is you'll only be purified as long as you're focusing like that. Right? And it doesn't mean that the final aspect of your purification is not, you know, something being worked out by Krishna that you might not find is so savory. You know, like that. Like Putana, it's not that all this and then she just turned pure and then all that and then everything worked out so nice that she became the maidservant. No, she was killed first.
she smelled nice.
Yeah, but after she smelled great. Was it die young and have a good looking corpse? Yeah. But in her case, it wasn't good looking, but good smelling. Right? Yeah, something is good. Conclusion. Pratigya. One can attain an exalted position in spiritual life even by neglectful and envious offering to Krishna. Right? So as we mentioned, if you get that, then imagine what is gained by that proper faith. That's why that's recommended. Because the point is if we're working with that that faith and that devotion, there's more of a tendency it'll be a little bit more steady. Because in the beginning, nothing tends to be very steady. Right? Except for our being in the material world. That seems to be quite steady. We've really come to the point of, you know, we're fixed. We have the taste. We're attached. We even get some ecstasy, right? You know, like that. But the point is that it's, if by that love and devotion, by proper association, then things will be more stable. That's what we're trying to do. But on this other side, then sometimes we're going to feel bad, sometimes not. But these people, they always felt bad. Kamsa, there's not a nanosecond he doesn't feel bad about Krishna. Right? And he's felt like that already for all the other children born, so 8 years, and then the 11 years that he's, you know, in Braj. So basically 19, 20 years. Oh, and then there's before they, you know, when they first got married. So you need some time there. So 20 plus years, he's been thinking of Krishna every moment. You know, of course, in a neglectful and envious way. But the point is that he was nishta in thinking about Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? And so, still, how they get exalted position in spiritual life. That is there. So then, having mentioned that point to show what is the power of devotional service, not that this is the recommended process, but just how powerful devotion is, then if you connect to Krishna in a favorable way, how much even greater that is. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Mark, can we say that Putana is like making the proof that it is an exception to confirm the rules that we do.
Means it's an exception, mean that we see all these demons they got, but they're an exception meaning compared to us. You know, even we want to be bad, we're never that bad. You know, how many people are continuously that bad? Right? So that's the difficulty. So you could say in that way, compared to us, they're exceptions. But you can see how many demons, right? There's 10 main demons that are there in the Brajlila. But then how many devotees we've heard of attain to prema and all that? So many more. So that's the point, is even the neglect, it still works. But if you follow what's recommended, then it works even better. So that's why we shouldn't take up the termination like this. Hetu. Because if one somehow or other becomes Krishna conscious by applying his senses in the service of the Lord, one is immediately freed from material contamination. Udaharna. When Putana was somehow or other directly or indirectly induced to render some service to the Lord by feeding him with her breast, she was immediately purified, so much that when her nasty material body was burnt to ashes, it gave off the fragrance of Aguru, the most agreeably scented herb. Putana was always hankering for the blood of human children, and with that desire she came to kill Krishna. Because she offered her breast to the Lord, she attained the greatest achievement. Upanaya. Putana was neither a devotee nor a non-devotee. She was actually a demoniac witch instructed by Kamsa to kill Krishna. Nonetheless, in the beginning, she assumed the form of a very beautiful woman and approached Krishna exactly like an affectionate mother, so that Mother Jashoda and Rohini did not doubt her sincerity. The Lord took all this into consideration, and thus she was automatically promoted to a position like that of Mother Jashoda. What is to be said, then, of Mother Jashoda and the other gopis, who served Krishna with such affection and love, offering everything for Krishna's satisfaction? The gopis automatically achieved the highest perfection. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended the affection of the gopis, either in maternal affection or in conjugal love, as the highest perfection of life. Nigamana. Devotional service rendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, either directly, indirectly, knowingly or unknowingly, becomes successful. Like that. One thing you can consider is that from this point, therefore Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended. That's technically the Upanaya.
Yeah, that's
the part before that is still another aspect of Upanaya, Udaharana.
In continuation, only therefore it is Upanaya.
Yes, but the point is, since it's there, you can put that as part here. Because the Upanaya can have so many parts to it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like in some of those, you know, like verses in that you have, these big famous verses, like have 10 pages of purport.
Mm-hmm.
It means basically you're talking about 9.5 pages of Udaharana.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Because the point has so many different aspects to it, you can see it from all these different angles.
Mm-hmm.
Is that make sense?
The same example that we had in Canto 9, like Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Canto 7.
Yes, like that. Any of those ones. Because there's so many aspects to one point. You know, what does attainment mean? What does exalted, you know, position mean? What does spiritual life mean? What does neglectful and envious mean? What is offering to Krishna mean? So you could take all these different things and give them all. Means the particular is one thing, the Hetu simply becomes that point, and the Nigamana is pretty straightforward, and the Upanayana is just bringing all that together. But the Udaharana then is where all the various kinds of explanations are given.
If I correctly understood, what I understand is in the Upanayana section, from Putana until perfection, should be actually in the Udaharana.
Yes.
And Upanayana must be only there for Mahaprabhu recommends this.
Yes. Because it's just a flow of the one thing. You know, that because here you're doing it makes it complete in itself, but that is that you're using the Udaharana and then bringing it to that. So that can go over that. You just have it as two different paragraphs. So you can see the gap. And then as reading it, you'll see it's all one thing. Yeah, that's the idea.
Maharaj, Udaharana means like analogy, example.
All the examples, extended explanations. See, because Pratigya is the point you want to make. The Hetu is the reason for that, or you know, it gives what the actual purpose is. It means what your intent is. Right? So one can offer everything like that, because if somehow or another becomes Krishna conscious by applying his senses, one is immediately freed from material contamination. So here, Putana was neither a devotee or that's an explanation of that. As this please, when Putana was somehow or another, indirectly. So both of these, their explanations of this hetu. Yes. Then the Upanayanas, now having shown that, then therefore Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended the affection of the gopis.
Yes.
Right? Because that is the highest perfection of life. Because if you have a connection, one can attain it even by neglectful and envious, but this higher is the more exalted kind of thing. Right? So that's the best. We've shown there's all the different things that are there. Neglectful than what you got, she got that, but you can see is what Mother Vashoda, and that's even a higher position.
Yes.
Right? And so therefore Lord Chaitanya recommends that. That's what brings it all together.
Yes.
Right? So in other words, the Pratigya Hetu Upanaya Nigamara can be as short as a sentence, a few sentences.
Yes.
And the Udaharana will be the big bulk of the explanation in the middle. That's why sometimes when a devotee will take in the explanation, you give examples and give some particular point. And then devotees will lift that from the purport. Because, let's say the example is about household life or about management. Right? And then you see, oh, here Prabhupada's talking about it in a nice way, giving some instruction. And then putting all that together. You know, one devotee once went through all this Prabhupada's books, took out anything where basically the aspect of grihastha life was mentioned in the sentence, or, you know, it was about that. It was obvious it was directly about that. Put it all together, made this nice thing like that, and presented it to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada looked through the whole thing, and then put it on the table and said, useless. And you're thinking, no, but it's all Prabhupada's quote. How could it be useless? Because it's only the Udaharanas. What's the Pratigya? What's the point you're actually trying to make? That they didn't catch. They just took the examples. Like, I don't know if you remember in previous years, we'd be discussing a point, giving something an example, and then the transitory audience, that they come and go, then they would catch something from the explanation and then get into that and miss the whole point that was actually being discussed. So that's the whole point, is that if it doesn't lead back to an offering, one can attain by an offering to Krishna, whether it's neglectful, it's envious, or it's in great love and devotion, affection and love, offering everything like that. All of that works, because that's the point that Narad Muni makes in the seventh canto. He lists all of them. The point is being connected to Krishna. But at the end, after having gone through all that, then he explains that those who offer the love and devotion, then that's the best. So now we've already explained all those other things.
Mm-hmm.
So now the focus will be on that. So they won't give as much on the other. Like that. But here now is a good story to show how, mm-hmm. you know, that's come about.
Yeah. So when we have sometimes some doubts to be raised, then the position of doubts can be either in Udaharan or in Upanayana.
No, the doubt is erased in Udaharana. Udaharana is how you erase the doubt of the other person. Having erased the doubt, now you can say, is having erased the doubt, now you can see is what we were saying before, is what you are trying to gain from your doubt is already there in our pratigya and hetu. Therefore, you know, like that. And then you go into then the thing there. Does that make sense? Because it's a step in a process. So the explanation is part of the process. So having explained it all and showing how, you know, all the different angles, then you take at that point and then just give the point. It's just, so therefore this goes with that. I'm saying that, you know, this one thing, this is how it works. And the reason for that is this. And then I give so many explanations, and I can see, having seen all those explanations, now you can see it works like this. That's therefore. And then thus. So sometimes you're right after, you see the therefore is the Upanaya, and the thus is the Nigamana.
Yeah.
Much of the purports is like that.
Yes.
Or you see something similar to that. And they're always right at the end.
Yes.
You know, sometimes there's the last, you know, two sentences, four sentences, and that's it.
Yes.
You know.
Thank you.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So do it like that, it'll start to make more, it'll become clear. Because otherwise, these ones become a little bit
blurry.
Yeah. Now the Pratigya Hetu are becoming a little bit more obvious. But between these two, it's not.
Exactly.
You understand?
Yeah.
So that's the hope. Yes.
It's 8 years, though.
Yeah. No, that's the whole idea. That's why it's a you know, it was, you know, the whole course has been conceived of in that kind of a, going through all these topics. Because then you start to get. So that's why this is Vedanta Chakshus. So we start to see Vedanta, which is just presented in Adhikarnas, which is a complete, how you say? The Panchanga Nyaya.
Right?
Yeah, but that's still, that's why the standard thing in the, you know, the Vedic education is 12 years, because it takes that amount of time to absorb. So that's why it's given. You know, someone might absorb earlier and then be able to go so much fine points, but if not, by the end of 12 years, you're sure you'll have caught the point. Oh, okay, so then that means we're the soul, not the body, we're servant of Krishna, and we should give up the identity that I am the controller and enjoyer, I am mine. And just see, I am Krishna's service, and everything you know, that I have is connected to Krishna. And the process is the chanting the holy name, and benefit is going to be developing pure love for Krishna. So after 12 years, then we'll have a good understanding of that. You know, because in other words, we're trying to get it from we've heard about it to, okay, we understand the words to we realize. So that's the... And so if it only takes 12 years, we're good.
Too much.
You know, because 12 years is only part of a lifetime. You know, they say one lifetime. So. Like
you're hoping you'll get better and better.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's the idea. Okay, chapter 7. The killing of the demon Trinavarta. Pratigya. In human society, there must be an ideal class of men, brahmanas, who can bestow blessings upon others so that everyone will be happy. Because the brahmanas who are completely expert in chanting the Vedic hymns are all yogis fully equipped with mystic powers, and therefore whatever blessings they speak are certainly never faultless, fruitless. Considering this, Nandamar soberly invited such truthful brahmins to perform a ritualistic ceremony according to the holy hymns of the Samaveda, Rigveda, and Yajurveda. He was fully confident that simply if the good Brahmins showered their blessings, the child Krishna would be happy. Krishna therefore says in Bhagavad Gita 4.13 that human society must have four social orders. It is not that everyone should become a Shudra or a Vaishya and human society will prosper. As enunciated in Bhagavad Gita, there must be a class of Brahmins with qualities like Satya, truthfulness, Sama, peacefulness, Dhamma, self-control, and Titiksha, tolerance. There may be caste brahmanas, and we have all respect for them, but their birth in Brahmin families does not mean that they are qualified to bestow blessings upon other members of human society. Right? So it's when they qualify as Brahmins. They're born in the family. Of course, we respect all living entities, and being having that kind of upbringing, that works very nicely and all that. The respect is there. But it's only when they actually practice, then that has. And then of brahmanas means they have some knowledge or they have some basic things. That puts them on the brahminical platform. But that puts them within the how you say, the vatu, the vipra, or then the proper point. That brahmanas must ultimately be Vaishnava. So that's the top position. And if one is a Vaishnava, he has already acquired the qualifications of a brahmana. Right? Because brahmana means he's interested in Brahman. When brahmanas are freed from envy, untruthfulness, unnecessary pride, grudges, disturbances by the opulence of others, and false prestige, their blessings never go in vain. So that's what we're looking for. So then these are things in our own life we want to look at. Giving up envy, untruthfulness. You see, truthfulness means it's in consideration of the Shastra. Right? And for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. Like that. That's truth, not facts. Facts aren't truth. We mistake in the modern society that facts are truth. Why would we make facts as truth? And that's important, right? Let us say that we're looking at a spreadsheet. What is it that you want to see, right? The facts means just that's what you want to see. How much money was there? What was invested? How much was made? What's this? What's that? Is it in the black? Is it in the red? What is it? That's what we want to know. So for economic development, you know, and those kind of things, then we work on facts. You know, positioning ourselves socially, then facts, or this and that. So that becomes important to us. Like Prabhupada said, it's not that everybody should become a Shudra or a Vaishya. and then the human society will go perfectly. No, there must be a class of Brahmins. So that wording is nicely saying most people are interested more in the Shudra activities and the Vaishya activities. They're not interested in other activities. How many people want to run the government? People want to control the neighborhood, or, you know, people listen to them, or this, whatever they say, you know, should be taken as truth. But actually to do the work of governments, how many people want to do that? Most people don't, right? When we use models for governance, we don't use governments. We use corporate, which is not a government. That's a Vaishya. That may be a big Vaishya, so he has to have some big administration, but it's not the administration we mean when you say administrator. Right? If you call a businessman an administrator, he'll say, no, I'm a businessman. The administrator are the guys I hire. You understand? You know, all the clerks and all the accountants and, you know, the different kind of middle management. Right? Does that make sense? And it's different, you know, Shudras and stuff like that. So they won't agree that. So governance, how many people want to be the Brahmin? Except to tell everybody what to do, but then you have to be free from envy, untruthfulness, unnecessary pride. That's the whole thing. You're going to be a Brahmin, you got to be proud about it, right? Grudges, you know, that one's okay. Disturbance by the opulence of others, it just keeps getting worse, right? False prestige, you know, it's going to, come on. This is modern, you know, up-to-date, you know, upbeat life. Is you have to have things, you know. It's like, I think it was in London, one of those first preachers that was there, and he was speaking with one, I think, Lord, right? And he told, you know, he asked him what's, you know, the practices, and he mentioned the four regulative principles. I was shocked, and he says, that's our whole life, it's about that. You know, I mean, we make money in this, but we do that so we can do these four things. You know, so it's kind of like, wow, so in the same way. So. Becoming a Brahmin means, what do you mean? You know, how will I be identified if, unless I, you know, express my anger, you know, the, you know, different, you know, what do you call it, diplomacies that I use, my various attitudes that I have, you know, and maintain my, you know, feelings towards others and their positions and how we disapprove, and then, you know, others, how they're opulent and how that's not Krishna conscious, but of course my one perfectly is, you know, and the false prestige that, you know, somebody said. Yeah, so that's the whole idea. There must be a group like that. Mm-hmm. You know, so the Vedic culture is aimed at training this, exposing people to this. From amongst that exposure, then some take up the Brahminical occupation. Others will take up the Brahminical values, though not the occupation. And so to various degrees of the individual, they may have these qualities or not. Right? You see, Nanda Baba doesn't have any of these, and he's a Vaishya. Right? Because a devotee automatically has all the qualities of a Brahmin. It doesn't mean he necessarily does the occupation of a Brahmin, but it means he has all the qualities of them. And so when it comes to the ashram activities, discussing Krishna, worshipping Krishna, and that any Vaishnava can do. But when it comes to, let's say, sitting down in the classroom and teaching a bunch of kids English or math, that only certain people can do that. I mean, as it is, people go nuts with their own kid, let alone, you know, a whole bunch of kids. And the best part, they're not even yours, right? Your kid drives you nuts, but you tolerate because it's your kid. Can you imagine the same kids driving you nuts and they're not yours? Therefore, promise. That's the whole idea. Right? But everybody has that thing where they can, the values of Krishna consciousness and the dealings of Krishna consciousness, as they advance, you see them manifest. So it has nothing to do with what their position, their social position is. Mm-hmm. It depends purely on their devotional.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? Because you see, Brahmins might have these disqualifications to some degree. Mm-hmm. And the less they have these disqualifications, or the more they're qualified, then the better their position. But we see the Vaishnavas are the best situated of the Brahmins, because then it's natural not to have any of these.
Yes.
Right? So, that makes sense. Because otherwise, socially, they might hold on to these. Chapter tried to say seven and summarized as one word. Chapter 7 summarized as questions and answers. Pariket Maharaj asked Srila Sukadeva Goswami a question. 10.9 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Question 10.9. It's from Bhagavatam 10.7, 1-3. King Pariket said, "My Lord, Sukadeva Goswami, all the various activities exhibited by the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are certainly pleasing to the ear and to the mind. Simply by one's hearing these activities, the dirty things in one's mind immediately vanish. Right? So that's the thing. He's mentioned the point that the last chapter was bringing out about connecting things to Krishna in a favorable way, hearing about it. Means being involved in it, hearing about the devotees who are involved in it, hearing about those who are hearing about those. Like we're hearing about Pariket Maharaj and Sukadeva, who are, we're hearing from Sutta and Shaunaka, who is hearing from Sukadeva and Maharaj Pariket, who then are telling different though they've heard from, like that. And so, like this, it all becomes nice. So he's reiterated it so you can tell he caught the point. Right? Then he goes on. Generally, we are reluctant to hear about the activities of the Lord. That's the only drawback in the whole thing, right? Means just all you have to do is hear with some faith. So simple. It's so easy. There's only one problem. Generally, we are reluctant to hear about the activities of the Lord. Right? That's the problem. Okay. But Krishna's childhood activities are so attractive that they are automatically pleasing the mind and ear. Like, Vrindavan pastimes, devotees can tell you most all the stories and know all the stories. We get into Dwarka stuff, you never hear them. You never hear anyone talk about it. Like I remember reading or hearing about something, I remember back in the 70s, 80s. I think it was in the 70s, something there that I knew was there. I could never find it again. Like that. And just earlier in the year, then going through Krishna book, then we had gotten to the end of it. And in those last three chapters, all those things that I went, where were those for years? I found them. Right? Because generally speaking, you never get to that. You never hear about that. Much of the time, because in the Bhagavatam classes, they'll go up to, 10, 13. Then they'll reset.
Yes.
Very few temples then continue on. So you don't come across them very often. Devotees don't talk about it. So that's the point that he's making. Generally, we're a little reluctant, but the childhood pastimes are so attractive, we're happy to hear them. So that's what's so special. That's why the difference between Jashoda and Nanda and Vasudeva and Devaki is that Nanda and Jashoda, they were witness to his childhood pastime, which was special. So then, when Krishna Balaram went to Dwarka and Rohini went back to Dwarka, then, much of the conversations when they would be asking them about the pastimes of the Lord, they'd ask about the childhood pastimes. Because the present pastimes in Dwarka, they were experiencing. So that, of course, they'd be discussed. But when they were more confidential settings, then they would ask about the childhood pastimes. Because they're just so attractive. And Krishna, then he was, I think in Dwarka, he was looking, the floor was so nicely polished, he could see himself on the floor, and he was like, wow. We're not talking Austin Powers here. We're talking about the Lord being, really just, he's so attractive. Even he's attractive. It's not false ego, it's just he's so attractive. Because he's manifest through his internal potency. Right? It means you manifest through your potency, right? Your arms, your potency, your head, like this. So he manifests his, so his internal potency, because of being his devotee, is so attractive that even he, as the Supreme Lord and the source of this, is attractive. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing that's so perfect. Thus, one's attachment for hearing about material things, which is the root cause of material existence, vanishes, and one gradually develops a devotional service to the Supreme Lord, attachment for him, and friendship with the devotees who give us the contribution of Krishna consciousness. So you see, he made a point and he went through those whole points. Right? He mentioned that you hear about it like that, but generally we are reluctant to hear, but by his pastime, then we're nice, and so thus it is cause of that. you understand? You can see how even he's presenting it according to that Panchakanyaya. Right? Sometimes if it's a simple presentation, you don't have, each of the five doesn't have to be so separately presented, but it just nicely flows in that order. Like that. So you see it's yeah. If you think it fit, kindly speak about those activities. So here's what he's having made that point. If you think it fit, kindly speak about those activities of the Lord. Please describe other pastimes of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appeared on this planet Earth, imitating a human child and performing wonderful activities like killing Putana. Srila Sukadev Goswami fulfills this request throughout the next several chapters. Right, so then, you know, all, yes, until other questions come up, and then it'll give other stories and other aspects. Adhyaya Prakashika. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur explains that chapters 6 through 8 show the Aishwarya display of power aspect of Krishna's childhood pastimes. By chewing Putana's breast, he showed the power of his lips. In the cart pastime, he showed the power of his feet. And killing Trinavarti showed the power of his hands. In revealing the universe twice, in this and the next chapter, to his mother, he showed all his powers. Sardartha Darshini 10.7.1. In this chapter, Sri Krishna's pastimes of breaking the cart, Shakata Banjana, killing the asura known as Trinavarta, and demonstrating the entire universe within his mouth, are especially described. Because so many things may be described, but the focus will be here. Because when you're talking about Krishna, there's unlimited things. So any one pastime you want to explain, there's so many unlimited aspects that you could go off into tangents for years and never finish the story. So the story moves, therefore they just hit, you know, all the main things and kind of hold the thing together. Yeah. When Sukadeva Goswami saw that Maharaj Parikra was eagerly waiting to hear about Lord Krishna's pastimes as a child, he was very much pleased, and he continued to speak. When Sri Krishna was only 3 months old and was just trying to turn backside up, before he even attempted to crawl, Mother Jashoda wanted to observe a ritualistic ceremony with her friends for the good fortune of the child, right? Because you have 10 main samskars, but technically I think there's a total of 48. Right? So this is one of them, just when the child at 3 months, because they always lie on the back, but when they manage to turn over. So that first time they turn over, then you can have a ceremony for that. You know. So in other words, it's just, yeah, you like parties, you can have 48 of them. But, you know, you're a bit of a party pooper, then, you know, try to stick to 10. And don't say, oh, that's so ritualistic. Just say, I hate parties. Right? Like that. Right, it's always for the good fortune of the child. See, Nandababa is always for the good fortune of the child. He wanted to do something for the good fortune of the child. So that's everything they do is just that it'll be nice for him. You see, it's a standard thing. Also, like Balaram in Dwarka, she always wanted to create auspiciousness for Subhadra. Right, so then any of the sadhus and that would come and stay during the Chatur Mas, then he'd have her, you know, take care and do something, and so she'd get the benefit. Right, we see the same thing with Kunti in the palace. It's the same principle, but it came down a bit more by default because no one else wanted to take care. So therefore, she was the only one willing to take care. And you know, because Durvasa has a reputation.
So Maharaj was through Srila Prabhupada, his parents.
Yes. Yeah, always that, you know, the puja, the Rath Yatra, the different things, taking Radha Govind in the temple every day, like that. It's always about that. So that's the thing, because that's the point. Parents means they want the best for the child. So therefore, if you're Krishna conscious, the best means Krishna consciousness. And if you're not whatever materialistic person you are, then that aspect is what you want to give your child. Right? You know, just like, what do you call it? That one story, I think, was, you know, from the 50s, that one of, I think, Elvis tells of this father who he knew that living in the material world, you had to be really tough and strong right? And so therefore, and he, by his work or whatever it is, he had to be away or he just couldn't handle the scene. So he was thinking, what can I do so that my son will grow up strong, right? So he named his son Sue, right? It's short for Susan, which is a girl's name. So then at school, everyone will harass him. So what will happen? He'll start to fight back. He'll become extremely tough. Right? So then later when this child meets his father, he asks, why do you name me Sue? It was like crazy. He said, because it made you tough. That I wasn't there to protect you. So so whatever is of value. So this is, you know, a bit strange, but whatever. The point is, this is what was valued, so this is what was given. You understand? So that's the whole point, is that the attachment has to be for the benefit of the child. Otherwise, it's just attachment. Then that's not appreciated. You know, it's like that. Prabhupada tells the story of that boy. I think he grew up without parents or something, and I think his aunt brought him up. But he became totally bad, became a murderer. He was on death row, and she came to visit him. And he got really angry because she had never taught him what was, you know, right and wrong. She just, whatever he wanted out of affection, out of attachment, she just tried to fulfill. And so then he got the wrong attitude. You understand? So it has to be that it's out of affection and it's beneficial. But it can't be just beneficial without the affection, can't be just affection without the benefit. So we see it's like that. Otherwise, why does not Mother Yashoda, you know, chase Krishna with a stick? Right? One of the more glorified pastimes. Because she wanted him to come out to be a good boy. Otherwise he'll grow up in society and people will think badly of him. How will that work out for him? So that makes sense. So that's what, yeah.
We see, not often, but sometimes, parents, even though they are devotees and they are practicing, but they don't teach it to their kids. I heard many explanations.
You have 8,400,000 explanations if you want to be, you know, if you want to be exact.
But I want to know what's the main point.
The main point is their own attachment. They don't want to be blamed later that they're bad parents or this or that. Because there was this when political correctness became the fad back in the mid-90s. Then kids started to grow up and, oh, you know, I can't go out and get a job and make $1 million and, you know, situate myself in life like I should be able to because I'm so fabulous and everything like that. And so they blamed the parents. So from then on, it became a major thing for most in the world, especially, you know, how you say, on the western side of the Atlantic, to use the position that, you know, we're giving them a choice. When if you only do karmi education, where's the choice? Like, if you only do devotee education and you say there's no choice, why would only karmi education be a choice? Right? So the whole point is then that became the fad, is that you do that. And it matches their attachments, that they don't have to do anything, they don't have to themselves set an example or that, they can get up late, eat whatever they want, dress whatever they want. And actually it shows the parents' own values. So all the parent is doing is trying to rationalize their own values. Because the point is you can discuss all the modern things. How much modern stuff is there? You know what I'm saying? It's like, you have this whole year of news, right? But then these big magazines, you know, like Time and News, they'll summarize the whole year in one issue. Then, the more fun is then after 10 years, after a decade, right? When it goes into the next decade, it's the last of that decade, you know, this December issue, or like that, they'll summarize the whole 10 years, right? And then when we had the end of, you know, the 1900s, the, you know, 2000, then they summarized the 100 years, and even there was one where it was about the last 1,000 years, who was the special people. So that's the whole point, is how much is there? Because whatever's in that 1,000-year issue, guaranteed, you know, 99% of people wouldn't know more than that. In fact, that's even probably more facts than they know about the last 1,000 years. So that's the whole thing. You say, no, but you have to be up to date. If you're not up to date in what's the last 6 months, you're not up to date. Nobody cares. If it's 7 months old, nobody cares. Let alone mid-1990s political correctness. Phew. I mean, that's like, you know, we thought that, you know, when the meteor hit and the dinosaurs died, that also died. But no, it's still alive and well. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole difficulty, is that they're rationalizing their own attachment. Because whatever is the parents' value, that's what they're going to give to the kid. And so all those things that they rationalize, those are their own values. That's how you see. The person could be fabulous and you think you're their greatest devotee, but what they, how they train their kid, what they value for a kid, that's what you can see is their core issues as a person. Devotional service is important to them, but their conditioning, and that's what you see is what they give their children. But, I mean, that's how you say, you know, the, yeah, and that, what is it, you know, being truthful, you know, people don't like that. That's truth. People don't like, no, but you can't talk like that and this and that. The facts? Oh, yeah, like that. But, you know, these are facts if you work in the field. You know, you deal with thousands of parents and you see that there follows a pattern. You know? So that's the difficulty, is that they don't see that because they don't know. In other words, what they value, what, in other words, from their life, what they thought was nice when they were brought up, that they want to give the child. But what's the principle of that? That's what you have to see. And then, you know, see where that is in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, if you only use the secondary form, then you get used to that and attached to that. And then they only know that because you say make it in the world, and you, okay, you make it in, you know, how you say, you know, on the East Coast, you know, Lower East Coast, or, you know, that conditioning, Upper East Coast, that conditioning, Lower West Coast, that conditioning, Midwest Coast, you know, like that. No one talks about what's in between, you know, so like that, unless you're maybe Chicago or, you know, down in Texas. But other than that, then no one talks about it. You know, it's just like, you know, these are your main options. But the point is each one of those can't really function in the other person's place. They actually can't. They have to adjust. All those other places, they don't function in New York. They can't. You know? And then you go over to London, then you go over to, I say, continental Europe. It's totally different. You're in London, it's right there. You can throw a rock from, you know, one side to the other, right? From Dover to, how you say, Calais? Yeah, from there. But it's totally different. The culture, the values, everything's totally, totally different. You know, it's a, you know, it's like that. You know, it'd be in England, what they wear, being free and this and that, like that. You just go across that channel there. They all dress much nicer. Like that, European, continental Europeans dress better. They don't look like stars. You know, like that. You know, so as you go over that much water, they become a little bit slobs. You go over a lot of water to the next, they really become slobs, right? And then you could say, no, but what happens if you go over the Pacific? No, but they're connected from the other side from that. So it's all one landmass, so they still dress good. So it's this whole idea is that it's what you value and you feel that this is what got me through life, this is what made me successful. So it's our conditioned attachments rather than the real success is Guru and Krishna. And therefore, then, you have to engage your senses in the Lord's service, as it mentioned. And then, so what are your senses? How do they function? What is the mind? How does it function? What is intelligence? How does that function? Right? What's the gross body? The subtle body? What's consciousness? That's the mechanics, the real mechanics of what you're working with. So you teach that. Generally, it's not taught. It's just you get some kind of values that are there, but they don't. And then the same ones, they'll say all that when the kids are younger, you know, up until early teens. Then when you get to mid-later teens, they just give up. Because to them, the kid turned out totally different. They don't know what happened. You just have to, you know, the kid has to, you know, find his own way. You know, we can only give that guidance and, you know, what we feel is best. And then they have to chart their own path and come to their own understandings. Heard this one also? Yeah. You know, it's like that. No, we can do it like that at school. This is what happened. And then you see him a few years. Oh, how's the kid? Well, you know. Yeah. Every time. So that's the whole thing. It's just they can't. So therefore, it's what you do in the beginning. It's what you get at the end. like that. So if you don't train them, you don't show them, you know, they're not shown values, you know, before five, then there's going to be a problem after that. You have to know. That's the whole point. So it's that the parent gets to put in that, you know, that close affection. But it still has to be for the kid's child's benefit. Not just, okay, they get some physical benefit or anything like that. It also has to be them as a person growing up. So then the stronger the parents are, that they're confident who they are, then the stronger will be their interaction. The parent with the child will generally be the more successful child. Because they've seen, you know, successful child is a form of parents who have common values. They live by according to those values. You know, it's just like, let's say mother and father are both doctors. There's a good chance that child will become a doctor because they're so focused. That's what they do. But if they're just, you know, middle class, average, they don't know this, they just, you know, got that, you know, look in the paper for a new job, you know, there's columns and columns and stuff. And so the child would be like that. So it's just whatever it is. So we say, no, be successful in the world means then you have to know who you are. You have to be focused. It's not what you're doing. It's how focused you are on doing it. You know, this idea, oh, my kid will have, you know, lots of money, lots of this and that. But even if you do, are people happy? So that's the thing. You have people in simple environments are happy, people are wealthy or not. You know, people are super educated and not happy, and people are not and they are. You know, you also have the other way, but you generally, you know. So the whole point is it's not consistent that you have these things, then you'll be happy. We had said something you don't like. You have to go. Okay.
Apart from the parents, even the teachers play a very important role in cultivating.
Yes, no, it said, Manu says mother, father, and teacher. Mm-hmm. Like that. It means the teacher that it's about them developing as a person.
Mm-hmm.
The teachers that teach you the particular skills, you're always respectful to them, mm-hmm. but you don't necessarily maintain that relationship through your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
But the teachers that train you how to be, you know, a proper devotee, a proper person,
mm-hmm.
then those teachers, that relationship's maintained throughout life. So mother, father, and those teachers. You know. And then for us, then you have the spiritual master, so the guru,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then those persons who we see in that capacity. So these are the ones that are that give the influence. Does that make sense? So it's not that one has to be practical and see what's best, what is the nature, and everything like that. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're working on the Newton's law on falling apples, mm-hmm. then you can... then see what is it, you know, what's the principle of what you do, not the frustrations, what you wish you could have done, like that. I had the potential, I could have done this, but you didn't. So, yeah, so that has to be seen. So then it has to be careful about that. That seeing, one has to self-analyze oneself nicely also,
yes.
to see what is the actual nature. And that in principle is then what you can give to the child. But what they're actually going to do, that you don't know. Right? Because it's only after training, and then they do it on, they take it up on their own, then you can say, that's the nature. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the nature in school is, you deal with that now, but that's not necessarily the final nature that you're going to say is, okay, this is how they fit into the social scene. Because, you know, it's they're doing whatever is of interest to them and whatever they have to do. So once they leave that, then you find out what do they do with it. That's then how they situate themselves. That's then their nature. Like that. Is that what it is?
Now, what is the connection between value and consciousness?
Value is what is important to you, that you will live your life according to that. Consciousness is then what level those values are on, whether on the sensual, the social, on the religious, on the spiritual, or on the devotional.
Well, value don't change, but consciousness change.
Yeah, it means you can purify.
Purify, yes.
But the point is that you're going to have the values, but you have to have the core values, but then you see is what's actually the important part of it. Because we may have an idea of what we feel is a value, like we say money is a value. But the point is money is not actually the value, because it's just a situation. What do you value with money? You know, so someone the security, someone the social status, someone the power and influence that it gives, someone the sense gratification. You know, it's just like the father, then it'll be, you know, the status and all that. His wife, it may be the security. But his son, who is then born rich, is just what you can, the enjoyment you can get from it. Right? So you see, the father is trying to make it, the wife is trying to keep it, and the son is trying to spend it. You know, like that. And so that's it. So all of them is different aspects of you know, I say, where their focus and consciousness is. So therefore, that's where their values are. So the one is not money is their point. Sense gratification. If he gets sense gratification for free, what do you need money for? You know what I'm saying? If the other person gets status in that without working so hard 16 hours a day to make money, why wouldn't he do it? You know? And if the wife would be, you know, have the security and all that without having to have all that money and everything to go with it and go to all those crazy dinners and talk to all those, you know, superficial people, she wouldn't do it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that you have to see what's the actual overall thing. What's the main thing? Because we take it, no, money's the thing, or, you know, but no, what does it give? That's what we're saying, is that you have the what we focused on with the senses, that's the secondary aspect. What is it that's behind that? That's what we want. You know what I'm saying? You know. So that's the whole point. Is that one eventually has to get to that. So in analyzing that, then one can see more clearly than what one should be doing. And therefore, then one gives that value. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that way, then, the kids can bring the best out in the parents, if the parents use it to advantage by analyzing their own position, because otherwise they might not. But then by this, if you want to see your child grows up nicely, you'll analyze your own position to understand that, see that in the correct context of Krishna consciousness, then that's what you can give to the child. Otherwise, day-to-day little details, they change all the time. You know, especially with the different ages, different things are important to them. Mm-hmm. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, especially with the boys. Girls is pretty consistent. Like that. You know, they like the same things all the way through. Like I just saw a one-year-old. Literally one-year-old gave a gift of two kind of like dress things. You know, you expect, you know, you give clothes to a boy, and then, you know. Girl, she's so happy, smiling, going at showing it to everybody, like that, showing she wants to put it on. It's 1 year old. Right? So in other words, girls are girls. It's just a matter of now it's something you get at the boundary wall, and then if they get a little older, you have to get it in Calcutta, right, and... It just goes up from there. The same principle.
Speaking about the ritualistic ceremony that is being performed by Yashoda for Krishna. As you know that Krishna is a perfect child and Nanda Yashoda are the perfect parents.
Right.
And therefore, you know, they may go on for performing the 48 sanskaras, which is again a perfect situation for them. But in that, how much is it expected, you know, to be followed by devotees in general? Because
The 10. Yeah, that's the point. 48? No, just do 10, which is basically, what is it, you know, 18%? And even that, no, 10. That's what's recommended. Prabhupada always talks about the Dasa Samskar. Gopal Bhatta Goswami gave, you know, in his Sakriya Sardivika, the 10 samskars. That's just what we do. That's just the natural thing. So it's beneficial to the child. One is there's the ones that benefit them, you know, that they develop themselves nicely. And the other is that, you know, and it removes any difficulties there. And the other is that it removes any impurities that come from being connected with the consciousness of the parents, which is the cause of their particular form, you know, and them being attracted to that particular family. Okay. So that's what the samskaras do. So, I mean, if you think that you're the most fabulous person in the world, you know, perfect, no flaws and all that, then half of the samskaras you can cut out, you know, because there's nothing. As long as you're also confident about your spouse is the same quality, then you can cut out half of those. But otherwise, then parents like to do these just in case. So that's why it just gives the 10. Most of the time, if you accept something, it's easier to deal with. You don't accept it, then, you know, it's just like, how hard is doing the homework every day at a particular time? Not at all. But how does the teenager feel about that? Right? It's like impossible. You know, what is it? You're ruining my life. I hate you. Right? Did I miss anything? Right? Oh. You're the worst parents in the world. You know, yeah. I think now we got it covered. Right? So that's all. But if you accept it, like let's say there's the kids at school, the guys with the four-point average, you know, the ones with glasses, you know, we generally call them nerds, like that. They know you do the homework and that. So the first thing they want to do is they want to have a good time. They come home, do their homework. Because then they do it half an hour and that is done. Now they have the rest of the day free while the other one tries to have fun. And then this homework is looming over them. It's bigger and bigger as the day goes by. And you get tireder and tireder and this and that. And you want to relax. And now you got your homework and like that. And you know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. You accept it. It's easy. It's work, of course. Everything's work. But if you accept it, it's easy. So the samskaras, if you accept the 10 samskaras, then you'll figure out how to work them out. But if it's always, no, but why we have to do this, we're devotees, we just chant Hare Krishna and all that. And but if you just chant Hare Krishna, you wouldn't be married, you wouldn't have children. So yeah, there wouldn't be any samskaras. So yeah, that, you have found the solution. You know? But unfortunately, they're married and, you know, going through so much more trouble than the samskara itself is.
Acceptance is possible only if one has faith.
Yeah, acceptance if you have faith, and that's gained by association. So Prabhupada gives the association in his instructions, and then you associate with devotees who have faith in those instructions. But if you associate with those persons, why do we have to follow all that? This is for smart people. Then, you know, if they even know the word, but like that. So then it won't happen. And then your kid will grow up, he won't have any samskaras, and then you wonder why he's so crazy at school and everything, and everybody else's kid is a little better behaved. Hey. Yes. Erica?
Yes,
ma'am. Yeah? Okay. Okay, so that was all about Mother Jashoda wanted to observe a ritualistic ceremony with her friends for the good fortune of her child. And then that last point that was made before with Nanda Baba, I think it was... Yeah, maybe it's in page 4. It's always you think you know where it is and you never can find it. So that's how you know Krishna's. The Shastra must be Krishna because he's so independent that you can look all day and not find what you're looking for. You know, while you go to an ordinary book, you find it really easily.
Yeah.
Okay, but that principle, because it said Nanda Baba was, remember, I think was simple and he would just wanted only Krishna's satisfaction. It said it a few times in the chapter.
Yeah.
So here now we say Mother Jashoda is the same thing. Such a ritualistic ceremony is generally performed with ladies who also have small children. When Mother Jashoda saw that Krishna was falling asleep, because of other engagements, she put the child underneath a household cart called Shakata. And while the child was sleeping, she engaged herself in other business pertaining to the auspicious ritualistic ceremony. Right? Because it's all the benefit of the child, because otherwise, what does a 3-month-old baby really care about all the scene going on? Right? It's not really that means they're influenced by it. They're in that environment, of course. But it's that. But she once knows that by doing this, taking care of the Brahmins, bringing, you know, like Nanda Baba did, he took care of the Brahmins, gave in charity, then he took care of all the residents of Vrindavan, you know, all that to get blessings for his child. You know, that was the whole reason he did it.
And also because Nanda Baba is a king, you know, Nanda Maharaj is a king and queen, so if they do, then the entire village will fall.
That's there. But it's that would have the aspect of Maryada to it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Ram's pastimes, you'd see that more happening. Here it's just simply affection for the child. It's the best thing for the child. So he's their child, so they're just acting as parents, not as the king and this and that. Mm-hmm. You know, like that. He may like to protect, he's the king, so he left so many people in charge, and when he came back and found this, you know, how you say, that his, one of the, you know, the forest had been turned into overly large, dead, you know, witch, you know, a depot, and he was not pleased. And then he came, and how did this lady get in? You have guards, you have everybody, what's going on here? That may have been the case, but it still was just concern for us, the child. You understand? Because otherwise, there's so much, I'll set example, but the point is what's the principle? We're talking about the principle, it's that affection. Let's say, Mangal Arti. The parents are there, you know, really performing, dancing, doing all those different things. The child's not dancing. Why aren't they dancing? They're setting the example, they're trying to get him to dance, the kid really doesn't want to get it dance. And then the parents are thinking, my child's so different from me. Right? Now, let's just, you know, go to another scenario. Where the parents are there at the Mangal Arti, the kid is not in sight. In fact, no one else is, and nobody they know. Are they dancing? Good chance, not at all. So children are, you know, like animals. They are able to pick up on what's the mood. So they know the parents are dancing, but they don't want to be dancing, and the kid doesn't want to dance. But if the parents are always dancing, they love to dance with the kid picks it up. That's the way it is. You walk into the house, you're pleasant, the dog's fine. You walk in the house, you're a little weird, the dog gets weird. You know, that's how it works. You know, if you got attitude, the dog has attitude. The difference is you're probably not going to bite him, but he'll probably bite you. Right? Huh? That's if you can, yeah, but he doesn't bite you when you do.
Right?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, that's the whole point. So unless you've been practicing, then...
Unless this is your dog.
Oh, if it's your own dog. Yeah, then you get many, many attempts until you get it right. Is that okay? Good? Okay. Underneath the cart was a cradle. So we were making the point was he's doing all this arrangement because it will be beneficial to the child. By giving in charity, by hosting all these nice devotees, by distributing prasad, by doing auspicious ceremonies, all these will be auspicious for the child. Because most of these time, these little things like this, the ceremony is extremely short. Most of the samskars, especially in the first year and all that, 5 minutes, you know, like that. Because the kid doesn't pay attention for longer than that. You know, you can't keep them quiet. So then they're all short. So the whole thing is just all this is there. The benefit of all that will go to the child. Because that's why they're doing it. So if you, like Nanda Baba, he gave 2 million cows in charity. But the idea is that is for the benefit of the child. So here, you're just born. And you have the piety of having given 2 million cows in charity. Not bad. Yeah, so that's the whole idea. So not just, okay, my little thing, do the little ritual, the samskar. But the whole thing is, you bring devotees, you feed them, you take care of them, you give them nice gifts, and all that. All that benefit goes to the child. Oh, but that's just all social and this and that. Yeah, right. You know, and all the Facebook is not. That's like pure preaching.
Maharaj, can
we say that also the parents have some benefit also? Yeah, of course they'll get benefit. It means if nothing else, you get the benefit of having given the benefit of 2 million cows in charity. So that's the whole point, that everybody gets benefit. The king gives one Brahmin 10,000 cows. He gets the benefit of that given 10,000 cows. Now that Brahmin, let's say he only needs 100 cows. Right? So then he gives the other, 9,900 cows in charity. Now he gets the benefit of that. Right, so you can say, but it's already been given. That's the whole point. The piety is so nice; it just keeps going. You know what I'm saying? Or he doesn't need any cows; he gives them all to someone else. He could give them all to one Brahmin. He could give them to a few Brahmins. They give them like to one, or give it to many. So everybody's benefited. So that 10,000 cows, then can benefit so many people. Some have 10,000. I think that one. One Brahmin who came and complained in Dwarka. No, it wasn't Dwarka. Was it Dwarka?
Mm-hmm.
No. It was the Pandavas.
Hastinapura.
Or in Indraprastha. I think it was Indraprastha. Mm-hmm. So.
No.
Yes.
Well, he complained.
He complained, but he said they had 10,000 cows. That's the only instance I've ever heard of Brahman having 10,000. I think Gautama with Satyakama, he told them take the cows that are 600 and bring them back. I think when they were either 900 or 1,000. Right. So he didn't have that many cows. Right. And that's Gautama. So this Brahman, something was there. Who knows? Big school or something is happening that he has that many, otherwise why keep that many cows? Or he had just gotten them and he was making arrangements to give them away, and then after a ceremony then all the wealth is there, then the dacoits come and try to take it like this, whatever. But the point is that it's so auspicious that you've given it away, you get the benefit of giving it away, and then the other person gets the benefit of having received it. And then if they give, they still have from receiving it and from giving it away. So that's why good work is always beneficial then. It's never a problem, never a loss. And then that's done with devotion, then you get the eternal benefit, not just the... So Nanda Baba, it's an eternal benefit. Right? So you're not going to match his piety, right? Because Nanda Baba is going to give away 2 million cows in charity on Nandotsava. As that 2 million cows are giving in charity, that whole pastime has already moved to the next universe where he's giving away 2 million cows in charity. And then as soon as that's done, it goes to the next room. And there's unlimited universes, so you can't even count how many cows he's given in charity. And he does that every day of Brahma, right? And that's been going on eternity. So the piety of, Nanda Baba, you can't even, you don't even try. That's where facts kind of run short, and you have to catch the essence.
Decorated with gold and gold.
Yeah, they're all decorated with gold necklaces and that, and they won't be just tight little things like that. They won't be chokers, because they swing and the cows can notice it and they can see it and they're happy because they see nice things. They like it. They can see they're decorated. They see the other cows and see like that. So, they're happy. That's why when you decorate cows, they become happy like that. They know something's going on. It's not like, a slug out in the backyard, go out there and decorate it. It wouldn't know what's going on. Right? Okay. Underneath the cart was a cradle, and Mother Jashoda placed the cart in that cradle.
This is the child.
Huh?
This is the child in that cradle. This is the child in that cradle.
What did I say?
The cart in the cradle.
Ooh, that. Mother Shoda showing off a little mystic potency there. Yes, this cart is so big. We need it for Krishna to play with. We'll stick it in the cradle. Underneath the cart was a cradle. Mother placed the cart. Wow, impressive. Okay. Mother Shoda placed the child in that cradle, under the cart. Right. Or her mystic power was so great she could make the cart small, put it in the cradle, and still have another cart there to be underneath. Right? So, okay.
Where's the child?
Huh?
Where's the kid?
The kid's in the with the little toy cart. In the cradle. Under the other cart. which is the original, you know, which is the expansion of the original cart, which he's holding, right? Right, she doesn't just give him, expands the you know, it's not that she keeps the original cart and then makes an expansion that small. She wants the best for her child, so the child gets the original cart as the small thing. And then the big, then she expands from there, you have the big cart.
With the demon.
With the demon, yes. No, she didn't do the demon. For the exercise, you know, get those legs, you know, moving and stuff. No. The child was sleeping, but suddenly he awakened, and as usual for a child, began to kick his small legs. This kicking shook the cart, which collapsed with a great sound, breaking completely and spilling all its contents. Because you've seen bullock carts are quite big. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, how do you stick a cradle under it? Like that. Children who were playing nearby immediately informed Mother Jashoda that the cart had broken, and therefore she hastily arrived there in great anxiety with the other gopis. Mother Jashoda immediately took the child on her lap and allowed him to suck her breast. Then various types of Vedic ritualistic ceremonies were performed with the help of the brahmanas. Not knowing the real identity of the child, the brahmanas showered the child with blessings. Right, because that was the whole idea. They just want all the blessings for the child. That's the point. The affection is so great, you don't care how great they are. You know, it's just like you have somebody, he's the you know, prime minister of the country. Right? But when his mother comes and visits him, be careful, don't get, out in the draft, you're going to travel all those ways, to do all that kind of stuff, but, you still got to take care of your health, you're not going to be able to do your work. She doesn't care. He's got so many people, he's got secretaries and other things that'll take care of all that. But she's, telling him, no, you have to take care. That's the point, the affection, you don't care about those things. So her affection is such that she's not worried about that. They just want to, there, and the Brahmins are giving the blessing, all these things. Right? And then again we see is that there's a problem coming up, then, if the child will suck mother's breast, then we know the child's in peaceful and everything like that. Because other than anxiety, then they won't. Right? They'll just hold on and cry like that. Another day, when Mother Jashoda was sitting with the child on her lap, she suddenly observed that he had assumed the weight of the entire universe. She was so astonished that she had to put the child down. And in the meantime, Trinavarta, one of the servants of Kamsa, appeared there as a whirlwind and took the child away. The whole tract of land known as Gokula became surcharged with dust. No one could see where the child had been taken, and all the gopis were overwhelmed because he had been taken away in the dust storm. But up in the sky, the Asura, being overburdened by the child, could not carry the child very far away. Right? So the whole weight of the universe, it doesn't matter, if it's Mother Jashoda or Trinavarta, no one can hold that much weight. Right? Although he could also not drop the child because the child had caught him so tightly, that it was difficult for him to separate the child from his body. Right? Because that one painting, he's trying to push the child away, but the child's very happily holding on. Right? Thus, Trinavarta himself fell down from a very great height, the child grasping him tightly by the shoulder, and immediately died. The demon having fallen, the gopis picked the child up and delivered him to the lap of Mother Jashoda. Thus, Mother Jashoda was struck with wonder. But because of Yogamaya's influence, no one could understand who Krishna was and what had actually happened. Rather, everyone began to praise fortune for the child's having been saved from such a calamity. Right? So then their worship of Lord Vishnu, all the charity and all that they're giving, and all the worship of the Brahmins, and they feel it's all giving, nice benefit, because the child, despite all these crazy calamities, is being saved. Nandamaraj, of course, was thinking of the wonderful foretelling of Vasudeva and began to praise him as a great yogi. Later, when the child was on the lap of Mother Jashoda, the child yawned, and Mother Jashoda could see within his mouth the entire universal manifestation. Yeah, it was a big day. A lot happened. Shloka Anushana, summary of verses. Verses 1 to 17, Krishna slays Shatakasura. Verses 18 to 33, Trinavarta attempts to kill Krishna. Verses 34 to 37, Krishna displays the universal form within his mouth. Verses 1 to 17, Krishna slays Shatakasura. Prabhupada writes, In the beginning of this chapter, two extra verses sometimes appear. Evam bahuni karmani gopanam sham ya yoshitam nandasya grihe vavridhe kurvan vishnu janardana. In this way, to chastise and kill the demons, the child Krishna demonstrated many activities in the house of Nanda Maharaj, and the inhabitants of Braja overjoyed, and the Braja enjoyed these incidents. Evamsa vavridhe vishnur nanda grihe janardana kurvan anisham anandam gopalanam sayoshitam. To increase the transcendental pleasure of the gopis and the gopas and gopis, Krishna, the killer of all demons, was thus raised by his father and mother, Nanda and Yashoda.
Mm-hmm. But, that is Prabhupada writes this, because it is not in Srimad Bhagavatam. Where does this appear in these two verses?
You'd have to ask. But it's there, because he's saying that it's happening before. Maybe it's in the introduction, maybe it's someplace. Yeah, you can ask. But it's not an uncommon thing that there are more verses, because before, all these are copied by hand. Someone may miss. Just like I remember seeing in, I think it's in somebody's Mahabharata, it mentioned that in one manuscript I saw, it gave, in this particular chapter, it told how Duryodhana was he was like a tree, or somehow or another the tree of fortune, that he was like the trunk, and then, you know, I guess Dhritarashtra was like the root, and the branches were Karna and Shakuni and like that, and the leaves were all there, you know, nonsense, and, you know, all this kind of thing, so like a sinful tree. It didn't say anything about Yudhishthira. And then I saw in another manuscript when it was talking, the same place, it mentioned the one about Yudhishthira and didn't mention the one about Duryodhana.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes these things get, so that's why then what the acharyas say, then we have to take that. If we only go by, oh, what's the particular one accepted by the modern academics, then the difficulty comes where you may miss out on a lot. So that's why when the acharyas mention things in their purports and give these things, mm-hmm. and we take them as this is the correct
thing. The situation comes in chapter 52, in the Machukunda pastime, wherein Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that these are the two verses that should appear, and then he gives the translation for them.
Yeah, so then you just put those things in,
mm-hmm.
like that, for that song. Means you don't put them in the main thing, you do it like this. You know what I'm saying? You don't make it as part of the verses. That we're just using the verses that are there. You put that like this. But, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur then, you know, comments that, you know, at this point between this and this, these verses appear. You know, like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, many times in like in the Gita commentary, he'll point out verses that would appear in between the verses that are there. Because a point's been made, and then what do you call it? And then a question's been asked, or a question's been asked and a point's been made. But then, following the detail of the logic, then there would be some other things in between. But Vyasadeva, for making it clear and working very nicely, then gives, you know, the 700 verses. Then the acharyas, then they point out another some odd verses that are part of the conversation that bring out these finer points. Because if you were just going to read that without the comments, then it would work. You know, so, does that make sense?
Right. Well, sometimes it happens that the verses that appear at a particular position, like let's say, after 17 verses, you have 18 and 19, you know, which are the two extra verses that appear. So in that case, that particular position appears perfect because it's a continuous flow, and then you are able to connect what's going on. But when it is in the beginning, then can we understand what's going on, because like it's just like...
No, it's just a matter of where it belongs. It doesn't matter. He's just bringing out, because these don't, doesn't matter where they go. But if he says that they would come at this point, you put them at that point.
Okay.
Is that what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just saying, don't write them into the main text. Don't put into...
Yeah,
like that. King Parikit said, My Lord, Sukadeva Goswami, all the various activities exhibited by the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are certainly pleasing to the ear and to the mind. Simply by one's hearing of these activities, the dirty things in one's mind immediately vanish. Generally, we are reluctant to hear about the activities of the Lord, but Krishna's childhood pastimes are so attractive that they are automatically pleasing to the mind and ear. Thus, one's attachment for hearing about material things, which is the root cause of material existence, vanishes, and one gradually develops devotional service to the Supreme Lord, attachment for Him, and friendship with devotees who give us the contribution of Krishna consciousness. If you think it fit, kindly speak about those activities of the Lord. And so, because of our attachment to the material world, we don't develop that attachment for Krishna. So when we hear about the pastimes, that attachment material is given up. That brings us to the neutral point. Then from the neutral point, we can make it positive and move forward. Right? So basically what we're trying is we're getting back to that neutral point, but instead of making the mistake and looking at Maya, we're going to keep looking at Krishna and move forward. Does that make sense? Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, my mind is attracted to all the pastimes of the Lord's other avatars. But I am particularly greedy to hear Krishna's childhood pastimes. With this intent, Pariket speaks the verse. Right, so that was the whole purpose. Right? It means technically that's the motive in saying these things. Srila Prabhupada adds, our material existence is Maya, or illusion, in which we desire different varieties of material enjoyment, and therefore change to different varieties of bodies. Brahmanyan sarva bhutani yantara rudhani mayaya. Bhagavad Gita 18:61. Asannapi kleshada asa deha. Srimad Bhagavatam 5:54. As long as we have these temporary bodies, they give us many varieties of tribulation. Adhyatmika, Adibhautika, and Adidaivika. This is the root cause of all suffering. But this root cause of suffering can be removed by revival of our Krishna consciousness. All the Vedic literatures presented by Vyasadeva and other great sages are therefore intended to revive our Krishna consciousness, which begins to revive with Shravanam Kirtanam, right? So that's the whole point of the literatures, is you'll start to revive that, then it gives direction and that, then what you should, how you should practice. In other words, somebody who is reviving his consciousness, what would be the practice? Right? And since bhakti is the process and the goal, it's not that it has to change. See, we're used to, I follow a practice and then get a goal, and then I don't have to follow the practice anymore. But devotional service, the practice is the goal. You know, the practice gets you the goal, and it is the goal at the same time. Right? The practice is always being absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and the goal is to always be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So it's all that's the beauty of it. So it always goes on. So it's not that it's left. So this idea is, okay, I'll do this and then give it up. No, there's no, you know, when I advance, I don't have to fall. No, it's not like that. One's always hearing and chanting. Srimad Tam Svakata Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2:17. Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vedic literatures exist simply to give us a chance to hear about Krishna. Krishna has different avatars or incarnations, all of which are wonderful and which arouse one's inquisitiveness. But generally, such avatars as Matsya, Kurma, and Varaha are not as attractive as Krishna. First of all, however, we have no attraction for hearing about Krishna, and this is the root cause of our suffering. So, you know, the main thing, we're not interested in any of it, so. At least, then they're attractive, so it gets one to be interested. Then we have a tendency to listen to all of them. Because that's what the point is. The devotees, then they know that all these are connected to Krishna. So it's Krishna who's doing these things. Does that make sense? Yeah. But Pariket Maharaj specifically mentions that the wonderful activities of baby Krishna, which amazed Mother Yashoda and the other inhabitants of Braja, are especially attractive. From the very beginning of his childhood, Krishna killed Putana, Trinavarta, and Shatakasura, and showed the entire universe within his mouth. Thus the pastimes of Krishna, one after another, kept Mother Jashoda and all the inhabitants of Braja in great astonishment. The process to revive one's Krishna consciousness is Adau Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.4.15. The pastimes of Krishna can be properly received from devotees. One has developed a little bit of Krishna consciousness by hearing from Vaishnavas about the activities of Krishna. One becomes attached to Vaishnavas who are interested only in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj recommends that one hear about Krishna's childhood activities, which are more attractive than the activities of other incarnations, such as Matsya, Kurma, and Varaha. Wanting to hear more and more from Sukadeva Goswami, Maharaj Parikshit requested him to continue describing Krishna's childhood pastimes, which are especially easy to hear and which create more and more inquisitiveness. So that desire, that interest, then that goes on and on. So that's the point. And then hearing that in the association of devotees, one becomes more attached to those that we hear with. So here, we're hearing from Prabhupada, hearing from the Acharyas, we become more attached to their association. So then the whole process becomes easier. Because the more you're attached to the devotees, the more to Krishna, the more to Krishna, the more to the devotees. So each nourishes the other.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.